to Wake Up Call on the Sportsnap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue. It is Sportsmap Radio. We just went over all of the NFL games that are going to occur this weekend, but also on Sunday, it's the United States Grand Prix from the Circuit of the Americas, Formula One, coming to the States. And as you've probably heard me mention, as a Formula One guy, I've seen the increase in popularity over the last couple of years, a lot of it having to do with the Drive to Survive Netflix series, and of course, one of the featured journalists in that series is Chris Medlin, and he joins us right now on a Progressive guest line. How are you, Chris?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Appreciate it. Let's talk a little bit about this race in particular. The United States has had a number of Formula One races coming throughout the sport's history, but it feels like the popularity of this sport has been growing a lot to do with that series. Are you sensing an increase in interest in this over the few days that you've been in the United States?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's been growing for a while anyway. The race here in Austin, like, since it's joined the calendar, it's like it's found a proper home. It was built just for F1 specifically, and then other series have used it since. But the city really embraces it. It's a cool venue to come to. So F1 really sort of clicked here. And we're seeing pretty solid growth anyway. But then, yeah, when Netflix came out, you had an absolute boom because just so many more people were introduced to the sport and thought, wow, this is really weird and quite cool. I need to check it out a bit more. And I know it's not for everybody, but a lot more people seem to think that it was something that they wanted to try and watch when they could.
And for you personally, I was just kind of processing this. I mean, you've been in the series since its start in 2018. But, like, this is really the first Grand Prix because most people saw this during the pandemic. And most people saw this in the downtime of 2020. Are you seeing people more, you know, coming to you and recognizing you now that they've now seen this series?
To be honest, I kind of got that in 2019 because, yeah, the first season had just come out at the start of that year. And the last time we were here was the end or towards the end of that season. So I did a load of kind of appearances and things at the track that I'd done before. Just as a service for a racer, and it was okay. There was, you know, some people knew me, but not many. But Netflix really made it explode, and yeah, a lot more people were coming up and wanting photos and asking questions, and then reaching out on social media since then. So yeah, that was all very, very cool, and now we're seeing obviously a huge increase in interest that's continued since the pandemic. One part of it that we can kind of quantify is that they've added, you know, close to 35,000 seats at the racetrack for this race to get more tickets sold because there's just such demand for people wanting to come and see it.
All right, let's get to the actual racing, and it's Max Verstappen and Lewis Hamilton in this very great championship fight that is all season. But we go to tracks where Red Bull has an advantage, and there are tracks where Mercedes has the advantage. We know that Christian Horner has called this Hamilton country. Is that true in 2020 based on the way the cars are set up and based on what the track is starting to show this season?
Yeah, I'd say it is. Mercedes were always very strong here. I think Lewis has won 5 of the 8 times that Formula One has raced here in Austin, and only once has he not had a car able to win, but he's taken advantage of every opportunity. And the Mercedes looked so strong at the last race in Turkey 2 weeks ago that if there are any doubts that, you know, maybe it would be different this year, I think that kind of put them to bed. So it would be a surprise, I think, to see Red Bull any quicker than Mercedes. This will be definitely a race that Mercedes and Hamilton are kind of earmarking to get the full points. But then the next two, in Mexico and Brazil, those two look much more like Red Bull circuits because they're at altitude and the Honda engine just works a bit better at altitude. So that gives them an advantage. So, yeah, even over these next couple of races, there's going to be potentially big swings in both directions.
What have both drivers been talking about this season in terms of the last few times that they have gone, you know, head-to-head on the track, racing on the track, that have ended up in the gravel at Monza or Max in the wall at Silverstone? They tend to put it off. I mean, I get how athletes kind of talk about these things to the public, but what are you noticing between the drivers as the intensity of the championship fight has increased?
Oh, it's definitely something that between the two of them has increased in the sense of neither of them wanting to back down. And it was very much Max Verstappen's style not to back down in any situation. But up to now, he's not been in a championship fight. So that kind of is okay because he was either trying to win a race or he's not going to win that one race in isolation. But the bigger picture didn't matter. But Lewis Hamilton, he's always been in championship fights for the last 10 years. So he was always kind of playing the longer game. And there were times he would yield to Max because it didn't make sense for him to get too involved. This year, as it's sort of grown and got closer and closer in the battle and the season's gone on, both sides have had to kind of dig their heels in and be like, you know, we're not giving an inch because this will matter come the end of the season. And that's when we had these incidents. You know, Max was used to Lewis maybe jumping out of the way a bit more. Lewis was kind of open to it before and then started having to stamp his authority on some of the moves. And then, you know, they come to blows. So it's been really interesting. The two of them say they're not feeling the pressure, but then you see them each make mistakes and realize they are. Of course they are. When you've got such a close battle, mistakes creep in because pressure comes up. So, yeah, they're both talking a good game at the moment, but when you get those crunch points and you see them come together, that makes you realize just how much they want it.
For a lot of people that are new to the sport who have caught in because of the reality show and then have been following it all season, maybe this is the first time they've seen action at the circuits of the Americas. What kind of track is it? What can they expect? It's got some design elements from other circuits. What kind of track will they see on Sunday?
They're going to see a very cool one. I mean, this is one of the tracks that a lot of the drivers say has been a huge success in F1 because it's one of the newer circuits, but they love coming here. And that's not the case with always the new tracks. Some of them, you know, are not in the best locations. They're not the most thrilling to drive. They're not great for racing. But Austin kind of has it all a bit. Turn one's incredible. The elevation changes and the very high point where you can see out over the track and to the city skyline as well. That's a great spot. You get a lot of overtaking there too. And then afterwards, the first section, so turns two through to about 8 or 9, is kind of modelled on Silverstone and Suzuka, where there's a really fast change of direction. And that's when you see a Formula One car at its best, cornering at high speed, changing direction instantly. It's kind of mind-blowing. If you've got general admission tickets, head down to that section and try and watch from there. And then there's a hairpin at the end that leads onto a long back straight where it's very bumpy, but there's going to be a lot of overtaking. So it's kind of got a bit of everything in that sense. The final sectors, you can see a car a little bit closer. There's a lot of grandstands around there and the tower that it goes around, but there's normally a bit more following there to set up for the start of the lap again in turn one, as I mentioned. But yeah, we've got overtaking opportunities, corners that are a really good test for the car, and it's one the drivers love.
Let's talk a little bit about American involvement in this sport. We've had American drivers in Formula One before, but now there seems to be a little bit more conversation about where the next one could come from. Let's talk about Michael Andretti buying a team in Formula One, Colton Herta moving up. Tell me about that process. I mean, what would a super licensed deal be for Colton Herta? Can he go right into it? Does he have to have a little bit more under his belt? And can we see this in the near future, or is it still a really difficult process for an American driver to get in from the ground up?
So it is a pretty difficult process, mainly because a lot of it is kind of skewed towards the European racing ladder. The FIA control racing in Europe. They don't run the IndyCar series or US racing so much. So they've kind of prioritized the way you score the points you need to get a super license. And the way that works is you need 40 points over a three-year period to sort of prove that you're consistently good enough to be able to be trusted with a Formula One car because, you know, they're the most advanced, fast, and at times dangerous machines in the world. But from IndyCar perspective, the world champion does get the maximum 40 points just for winning the title. So straight away, Alex Palou this year, for example, won the title, gets 40 points. So he could race an F1 just off the back of that. But once you get past third place in the IndyCar series, they kind of rank it lower, which I think is perfectly unfair. They rank it lower than Formula 2, the kind of feeder step in Europe. And you don't get as many points for those positions. So you need basically two top three finishes in a row in the championship to get a super license from IndyCar. So for Colton Herta, for example, as you mentioned, he'd need another solid season like he's had because the last two, I think, he's been third and fifth. He's close on points. He only needs about 8 more super license points. So I think a top 7 finish or 6 finish would do for him. But he does need to just show that consistency for one more year. Probably unfairly. I mean, these are guys that are very talented, winning races in IndyCar, deserve to be able to race in F1, and they probably need to address it. Fernando Alonso said yesterday that IndyCar should be weighted more so that maybe the top 3 drivers in the championship automatically get 40 points, like it happens in Formula 2. So that's why if US drivers are racing in Europe, there's more chance to accumulate those points for the super license and get in earlier at a younger age. If they've come through the IndyCar setup, then they need, you know, a couple of years right at the very front, which isn't easy to do. But that's not a reflection on their talent. That's a reflection on the way the series is structured. So I think that maybe needs revisiting. And if the FIA do revisit that and give IndyCar more super license points, then that would help us see more US drivers move across in the future.
It seems obvious, like if you go to soccer, obviously this country is crazy about Christian Pulisic. If we had an American driver, does that American driver have to be on a good team? If it's a backmarker team, do you think we'd still gravitate to the sport more just to cheer on that driver, even if he's not anywhere near the front of the field?
To be honest, no, I don't think so. I was doing an interview with Bobby Epstein, the chairman here at Croker, yesterday, and he said something similar. But people aren't going to root for a guy who's running around at the back because, you know, it's a bit demoralizing when you're doing that. You want to see them get in, and sometimes that's a step you need to take, you know, to get experience. You've got to race for a team that's maybe not that competitive. But there's enough good American drivers that could be in competitive cars, and that's what's going to capture the imagination. If the US audience are seeing an American driver fighting for podiums or at least points, but even wins in future, they're really going to get behind that. And if an American wins a world championship, it's going to be huge. But if they're running around at the back in 15th, 16th place, like maybe your hardcore fans are going to connect with it. But anyone else who kind of takes a bit of a look, who are kind of interested in F1, are going to wonder why their driver from the US isn't doing so well and not really get buy into it so much. So I think it's really important they get a competitive car. And in that sense, we don't know what next year will look like. There's a big regulation change. So who knows, some of the teams that currently aren't competitive could become competitive. And that would mean there's maybe a few more options for guys on the grid.
Absolutely. Real quick, before we let you go, the future of the Austin race, I know there's still a contractual issue, does look optimistic, but what do you know about the future of this race? I know Miami's got a 10-year deal, but what about Austin? Will we see it in the future, do you think?
Yeah, I'd be surprised if we don't see it in the future. I mean, they've done so much work to increase the popularity of F1 over here in the US and to really give it a home. And off the back of that, we've seen like the foundation set for the recent growth. F1 will be talking to the circuit owners and the race organizers over this weekend. Again, Bobby Epstein said yesterday he's going to take the F1 CEO, Stefano Domenicali, round in a golf cart at some stage to show him like the huge show they're putting on, because it's an incredible event that they've got organized this year. And he wants to really show all of that off first, and then he'll have a conversation about the new contract, because that will hopefully really convince Stefano about the appetite for F1 over here. But Formula One definitely want to be here with more than one race. They've got two now with Miami coming on, as long as they get this deal done. And they very much want to get this deal done. So it might not happen instantly, but I'd be very, very surprised if we're not racing here next year.
Well, I really appreciate your time, Chris. I've been a Formula One fan for a long time. I don't get to talk a lot about it on an American sports talk show. I've seen a lot of my friends really increase in the interest, so I've really enjoyed it. And a lot of it has to do with you guys and the way you're covering it and the way you're talking about it on that reality show, Drive to Survive. I really appreciate your time, my friend. Thank you so much.
Not a problem. Thanks for having me on. It was really good fun.
Yeah, great. Chris Medlin, again, joining us to talk about the U.S. Grand Prix, which will be this weekend. It's on ABC, and yet it does come at a time where the NFL is sort of competing against it, but it's a once-a-year thing. If you kind of bounce around a little bit, you might be interested to see what's going on in Austin, Texas, coming up this weekend. And they are the fastest cars in auto racing right now. All right, well, as we continue, we'll give a wrap-up into what we got this weekend, including the baseball, the two Game Sixes coming up today and tomorrow in the weekend full of sports on Sports Map Radio.